Butterfly, written by Independent Variables, read to you by BeBrave13. A Star Wars fic featuring Bly. 5052 saw hollow of a butterfly once in a flash training module on toxic insects. The module didn't have anything on insects that weren't deadly, but being able to identify flora and fauna that could kill was deemed a necessary skill. Sheyash Kiram, colloquially known as the Mandalorian Swallowtail, the most poisonous insect in the galaxy, native to Mandalore but extinct there and now scattered across most jungle worlds. It fed on Var-Tur flower nectar, and its wingspan could reach up to 25 centimeters. In the hollow, each of the butterfly's black and brown hindwings were marked with a deep, vivid, yellow X. 5052 had always known the definition of the word beautiful, but he had never described anything with it before. There was a difference between something poisonous and something venomous. Venom required active delivery of toxin, such as a bite or a sting, while poison relied on passive delivery of toxin. The touch of a poisonous creature could mean death. On most worlds, poisonous creatures were brightly colored as a warning. Late at night, 5052 turned the image of the butterfly around and around in his head, his perfect memory providing every detail of the shape and the shade of the markings he'd only seen for seconds. A beautiful warning, a fragile killer. "Don't get too close," those markings said. "Don't touch. Deadly." During the day, 5052 studied his siblings and himself, brown skin and brown eyes and black hair, bodies clothed in the vivid red and blue of their uniforms, the only bright colors in the facility. As he and his siblings learned how to kill with the touch of their hands, he wondered if war was a kind of poison, and if so, why didn't he carry those warning colors in his skin? His skin was so easy to break. Some days, it felt like it was barely holding him together. When they were 9, 17 took 5052's class off-world for the first time in their lives, for survival training. Sergeant Brawlor accompanied them to supervise. They landed on the planet around mid-morning. 17 split the class into 6 squads of 6, divided gear and rations equally between them, and sent each squad in a different direction. There wasn't any point in doing solo training. No one would rescue a single clone, no matter how valuable. But several? All commanders, all missing at the same time in the same place? That would be worth at least a cursory flyover. 5052 was glad he wasn't going alone. He wasn't sure how to be alone. It was a concept he'd never encountered in flash training, and 17 had to explain it, explain that clones weren't made to experience it. 5052 hadn't known loneliness existed, much less to fear it. 5052 was with 1004, 2224, 2237, 1138, and 1119. He got along well with all of them, and as soon as they were out of sight of 17 and Brawlor and the ship, they started talking amongst themselves, pointing out the differences between the real forested landscape they were marching through and the simulations they'd fought in before. Everything was so much brighter, the colors sharp and vivid and stinging in his eyes. They set up a shelter in the crevice between a fallen tree and a few boulders, and by nightfall had thoroughly explored the area around it. 1004 had even collected several long stalks of an edible plant he recognized from their preparatory survival training module to supplement their rations. They tasted bitter and stringy, and 5052 wanted more as soon as he was done with his portion. 1004 and 5052 volunteered to take the first watch. They sat in silence and watched the pale yellow moon rise from on top of the stones until it was time to wake 1138 and 1119. 5052 woke early the next morning and eased his way out from the pile of sleeping brothers and into the dawn. He found 2224 leaning against a moss-covered stone, 2237 dozing against his shoulder, watching the sun rise through a gap in the trees.
"More colors than on Camino,"
24 said, soft in the silence. The edges of the sunrise glowed pink and orange, but the center burned red and yellow, same as every Camino sunrise. 5052 wondered if a sunrise was a kind of warning for the day to come. He wandered through trees, trying to find more of the plants 1004 had picked the day before. He found a patch of them, and another just beyond it, and followed them out into a clearing, a meadow. He stopped and stood in the sunlight and watched the grass move in the wind. There were butterflies among the flowers, one of them fluttering closer and closer to him. Ever so slowly, heart pounding in his chest, 5052 knelt to get a better look. He didn't recognize it, but he wasn't expecting to. It was small, pale yellow wings marked with white splotches. He watched it flit from flower to flower, the handful of stalks and leaves he'd collected all but forgotten. The butterfly flew close, hovered, and landed on his face. 5052 froze. He sat, stiff and still, not daring to breathe for the 73 seconds the butterfly rested on his cheek, pale yellow wings slowly opening and closing, each touch feather light against his skin. When it flew away, 5052 brushed a hand over the spot, and the pads of his fingers came away coated with yellow dust. Beautiful. Butterfly was too long. Numbers were too easy to confuse when shouted across a battlefield, so in the end, names were accepted for their efficiency. But long names, complicated names, those weren't efficient either. Butterfly was too long. When he grumbled, the rest of his squad offered suggestions for shortening it. But was immediately rejected, and Gree's smirk knocked off his face with a friendly cuff. Oddball's suggestion of fly would have been fine, except he wasn't particularly good at flying. Apo liked butter, which was short enough, but didn't have quite the right sound. Bug wasn't so much rejected as glared down, Bakara shrinking into his seat even as he continued to snicker. Bly, Cody offered, once everyone was done teasing. Bly. Butterflies didn't live long. They were fragile, delicate, easy to kill. If they weren't killed, they starved to death. There were stages of life that came before that. Egg, larva, pupa, but the final stage, the adult stage, only lasted a few weeks. Bly was issued his armor straight off the assembly line, collected it, and put it on piece by piece along with hundreds of his brothers, the helmet last. The layer of plastoid felt no heavier than cloth. The yellow markings that announced his rank he painted on himself, following the neat lines of a stencil. He didn't have a name for the emptiness inside him as he marched at the head of his troops to board the transport ship, except that it was different from the emptiness of hunger. He wondered if it would kill him, eventually, if a blaster bolt didn't. If it was possible to starve to death while still getting plenty to eat. Commanders had their own quarters, and were expected to keep some distance from their troops. Bly wished 17 had given him a warning instead of a reassurance. He picked yellow as the color of the 327th. He wanted something familiar and something true. A warning. Don't touch. Deadly. As soon as he had the chance, he got his own vivid yellow warnings inked into his skin, his perfect memory unable to let him forget the shape and the shade of a Mandalorian swallowtail's markings. General Sakura's skin was blue. He'd known, in some distant part of his mind, that all Twi'leks had bright skin tones, but he doubted any others were as deadly as his general. Bly wondered if she was venomous or poisonous, if it would be a word from her lips or a touch from her hand that would mean his death. He found her beautiful warning redundant. He already knew better than to get too close. Ayla did not know better. Battlefields were brown with mud and black with char and ash. The warnings of danger and death came from the clone troopers in their vibrant blue and orange and green marked armor. When the 327th took heavy losses, the ground was almost invisible under bright spots of red and yellow, brother's blood and war's poison. Red and yellow were colors Bly learned to hate. Insects, the Natborn officers called them, watching from above as identical hard-shelled bodies scuttled across the ground. Finite lifespans, and only one purpose before their deaths. Bly wished he had wings. Most toxic creatures were immune to their own toxins. From his first breath, Bly had taken war into his lungs. He'd never thought it would affect him. He'd painted the warning on his armor, wrote it into his skin. Don't touch. Deadly. But as the war dragged on, and Bly began to feel the weight of it in his bones and the burn of it in his blood, as the hollow ache in his chest became impossible to ignore, he wondered if he'd been made to withstand the poison or intended to die from it. He wondered if it was slow acting, the kind that built and built in a creature's bloodstream until it reached toxic levels. He was dying. But he'd always known he would. For all his training, for all his genetically modified endurance, underneath his shell of plastoid, he was fragile, delicate, easy to kill. If he wasn't shot down, he would starve to death. And if he didn't starve, his own poison would eat him up from the inside.